From the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center in Prashanthi Nilayam, you are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Professor Sanjay Sahani, who is currently the Controller of Examination of the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. Sri Sanjay Sahani was a student of the first batch of the 5-year integrated commerce program in Swami's University. He won the gold medal for academic excellence both for his Bachelor of Commerce as well as Master of Commerce programs. Subsequently, Bhagwan blessed him to join as a faculty member in 1987 at the Prashanthi Nilayam campus. Later, he also served as the warden of the senior boys hostel in Prashanthi Nilayam and the principal of the Brindavan campus. The topic for today's talk is the Lord's Lotus Feet. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 18th of August 2019. And with that, over to Professor Sanjay Sahani.
Offering my loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, revered elders, brothers and sisters. The theme for today's satsang, which I chose for myself and for our contemplation, is the Lord's lotus feet. The other day I was listening to a narration of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the narrator expressed this thought. He said, when you do the parayana, when you do the reading of the Lord's story, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the story of all the avatars of the Lord. You start with the first canto and sequentially progress to the last canto. And he gave the analogy of meditation on the Lord. He said, just as when you start your meditation on the Lord, you start with His feet. You focus your attention on the feet and then gradually raise your vision right up to His face. In the same way, the first canto of the Bhagavatam is His feet and the last canto is His beautiful face. And you cannot jump chapters, because as you start with the meditation on the feet, you grow in purity and earn the eligibility to have the vision of the beautiful countenance of the Lord. So considering this satsang as a meditation on our beloved Bhagwan, I thought, why not share some thoughts on His lotus feet? Now, as I commence, I cannot but recall with great fondness Bhagwan's immense compassion. Whenever any speaker in the Divine Presence, just before his talk, would go to take his Pad Namaskar, invariably, he never failed in this particular gesture of his. As the individual would bend down to take Pad Namaskar, Swami would take his hand and put it under the table. It was not visible to anybody else in the audience. It's only that speaker will know. And the reason why he would do it, when the individual gets up from taking Pad Namaskar, by mistake, he should not bang his head on the bottom of the table. So he would put his hand, even in such a simple act of taking Pad Namaskar, we experience His love and His compassion. The Lord's lotus feet is being glorified in the scriptures. And before I share some of my own experiences with lotus feet of our beloved Bhagwan, I thought, let us take some insights, because as Bhagwan once said, If the Nutan wants to understand the Sanatan, they need to take the help of the Puratan. Who is Nutan? Nutan is the modern man. Now he wants to understand, he wants to comprehend the Sanatan, the eternal being, the one transcendental principle. How can he do it? He can do it with the help of the Puratan. Who is the Puratan? The Puratan are the rishis, the great sages. Out of their tapasya, out of their penance, they have left behind for humanity their wisdom, which is enshrined in the scriptures. So when you take the help of the scripture, you get some understanding of different facets of the divine. So when I was looking at the various shastras that our sages have left behind, so many episodes relating to the Lord's feet came to my mind. The first episode that comes to my mind is that of Bali Chakravarti. The Lord incarnates as a small boy, 3.5 feet, Brahmin boy, glowing with the energy of Brahmacharya. He goes to the Sabha, to the palace of Bali Chakravarti, who was a great emperor in Kerala state. And immediately, Bali, the king, comes to welcome this new visitor to his assembly. And he asks him, "What can I do for you? What can I offer to you?" And actually, it is the Lord himself who has come there. He says, "I want space as much as it is covered by my 3 steps. So Bali, a great devotee of the Lord, but with one flaw. What is his flaw? The flaw is that he is filled with egotism. And the Lord is there to remove all our flaws. So he has come to bless Bali and to remove this angularity in Bali's personality, which is an obstacle in his becoming one with the Lord. So the moment he listens to this request, he says, "Surely, it's granted," in spite of the intervention of Shukracharya, who was the guru of Bali. And he says, "Hey, you don't understand. Who has come to beg of you? It is none other than the Lord himself." He said, "Wow, what an opportunity. The Lord has come asking something from me. I am not going to listen to you today. Today I am going to fulfill whatever the Lord wants." And this is how the story goes. Immediately, the Lord takes a gigantic form. In one step, he crosses the whole earth. On the other step, he crosses the whole heavens, the skies, and there is no place left for taking the 3rd step. So he asks Bali, "Where should I take the place, my 3rd step? And Bali realizes that he cannot go back on his word. So he bends down and he prays to the Lord, "Place it on my feet." And the Lord puts his leg on Bali's feet and redeems Bali. That is the moral of that whole story. By placing his feet on Bali, of course, the story goes, he is sent to Patal Loka, but the essence of the story is that he redeems Bali, because his great flaw of personality in the path of devotion, of egotism, had to be removed, and the Lord used this mechanism to remove the ego. So, you know, when we fall at the feet of the Lord, it's not easy for everybody to fall. It's not easy for everybody to even take the name of the Lord. Somebody was once narrating, a relative was about to die on the deathbed. And the relative had been an atheist throughout life. So this particular lady wanted her relative to at least die with the name of the Lord. So she goes to the bedside of her uncle and said, "Uncle, please take the name of Narayana." And he says, "No, I will not." Even on his deathbed, he doesn't want to take the name of Narayana. So she is, you know, thinking he's now just last few seconds of his life left. At least now, somehow, by some strategy, let him utter the name of the Lord. She asks him, "What will you not chant?" She asks him, thinking that, you know, he will reply, "I will not chant the name of Hari." And that man says, "I will not chant what you want me to chant." And he passed away. And so she says, how difficult is to take the name of the Lord unless you have done it throughout your life. At the last moment, the thought of the Lord doesn't come to you. So, you know, when life is going so smooth, when life is an even keel, one wonders, why do I need God in life? You know, this is the great moral of the story of Gajendra Moksham. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have this wonderful story of the Moksham of Gajendra. Gajendra actually was a king, and he was also a king by name Indrumna in the Pandya kingdom in South India. And a great rishi, I think Agastya Muni, comes to see him. He is so engrossed in the puja of the Lord that he ignores the presence of the great sage and his disciples and does not show due respect. So Agastya gives him a curse. He says, "May you be born in your next life as a proud elephant." So that's how, under curse, he is born as an elephant. Now, on this particular issue, one insight Swami has given us. In the Vivek Chudamani, Adi Shankaracharya says, the great spiritual giant of India, he says, "Jantu naam nar janma durlabham." Swami would often quote this. "Jantu naam nar janma durlabham." There are 84 lakhs of species on earth. And in this 84 lakhs of species, the crown jewel of God's creation is human being. You know what is the significance of the human birth? Swami says, as a fruition of all the lifetimes of births that you have gone through, you get a human birth. What is special about a human birth? If you were born as a donkey, you die as a donkey. If you are born as a jackal, you die as a jackal. If you are born as a cow, you die as a cow. If you are born as a serpent, you die as a serpent. But it is one and only one birth in the whole of God's creation that you may be born a human being, but you have the potency, you have the potential to die as God. You can realize divinity in this lifetime. See, that is the preciousness of the human birth. And one more thing, when he was talking to some of our teachers, one day Swami shared, he said, "See, having got a human birth, for whatever you do, say your misdeeds in this life, you may be born poor. You may be born maimed. You may be born, you know, with all kinds of frailties. But never it is going to be happen in any time where, having got a human birth, you will be reborn in any lower life form. You will always be born as a human being, once having attained, unless there is a curse on that individual." So that kind of, so look at the preciousness of a human existence. So that kind of a curse fell on the head of this king called Indrumna, and he was born as a king, elephant. Now, he was a proud elephant moving around with his herd of calf elephants and female elephants. And one day, as they were moving in the jungle, they feel thirsty. And they spy from their heights that there is a lake nearby. And Gajendra, with all the herd of elephants, comes to the waters of the lake. And they enter the water and they drink to their fill and they are playing. And slowly, as time passes, the others recede from the water and go and stand on the shores of the lake. But Gajendra loses himself in that lake, extends his time in the lake, and danger is not too far away. There in the lake, there is a crocodile. And the crocodile comes and catches hold of the feet of Gajendra. And there is a tremendous fight between the two. And he tries to kick off the crocodile, but the crocodile is not willing to get hold because it's a massive, massive conflict. One, the king of the jungle, and the other, the king of the waters. And the Bhagavatam describes that this conflict goes on for a very, very long period of time. And Gajendra thinks, what is this crocodile? I will finish it off in no time. But that time passes. He's not able to get over the hold of the crocodile. And now, as his blood is going into the waters of the lake, he becomes weaker and weaker. For some time, his companions, they come to help him. Just as in this world, when we are in difficulty, people will come to help us. But they can help us only for some time. They can't be there all the time for us. So the companions are not able to come to his rescue. So they recede and go back. And all alone, Gajendra is there. And then he thinks to himself, after all, you know, in his previous life, he was a devotee of the Lord. And then he realizes that this is a losing battle and his life is at stake. And he says, I do not know who you are. I do not know what is your name. I have never in my life called out to you. But they say that you are there. So here am I calling out to you, O Lord of the universe. Please come to my rescue. So this is Gajendra's prayer. And there is a great poet in Andhra Pradesh by name Potana. Potana's description of the Gajendra Moksha is amazing. There's a very famous stanza which he describes at this point of time. He said, the Lord was in Vaikuntha. And at that moment when Gajendra calls out to him, suddenly he gets up. He does not even tell his consort, Lakshmi Devi, where he is going. He does not summon his weapons, Shankha and Chakra, you know, because he is going out. So he will need his weapons for any eventuality, any casualty which can arise. But he doesn't even ask for his weapons. Garuda is his Vahana, his vehicle. He does not even summon Garuda. He does not even remember to dress up properly, and you know, he's going out of the house, so he should at least be in proper attire. People, you know, his appearance should be proper, but he does not. He rushes out, that because his devotee is in danger and he has to rush to his devotee's rescue. At that point of time, suddenly in the skies, our Gajendra sees the Lord is coming, and he has picked up a lotus, and he takes this lotus and he wants to offer it to the Lord, and the Lord comes rushing down, and this is how the Bhagavatam describes. He sends his Sudarshan Chakra, and that goes and kills the crocodile and relieves Gajendra, and that's how Gajendra gets liberated. Now, Swami, while telling the story, he says, what is that Sudarshan? It is not some chakra. It is not some weapon which is coming, flying in the air. Sudarshana means Su. Su means auspicious. Darshana means his eyes. His eyes fell on the elephant Gajendra, and that glance was sufficient to redeem him. Now, actually, what has happened is the crocodile also was a Gandharva in his previous life. And one day, a rishi comes to the river to have bath, and this Gandharva, you know, he is playing in the water. Suddenly, he goes underwater and pulls the leg of the rishi. So the rishi gets very upset. He says, "What is this? You know, you're troubling me, harassing me like this. May you be born in your next life as a crocodile. And may you keep doing all this to everybody in your future life." So the crocodile is also on a curse. So in one moment, both the crocodile and the elephant Gajendra get relieved, get liberated. Now, there are famous Alwar saints in the southern state of Tamil Nadu in India. So one of the Alwar saints asked this question: "What is this? It is the elephant who prayed to the Lord, but the first person to be redeemed is the crocodile. The fellow who came to, you know, harass the elephant, he gets redeemed first. He gets liberated first, even before the elephant. What is this mystery?" So another Alwar answers this question. And he says, "He who catches the feet of the devotee of the Lord will be liberated even before the devotee himself." He who catches the feet of the devotee. See, we were talking about the Lord's feet. You forget the Lord's feet. You know, if you have a true devotee of the Lord, even his feet are so auspicious. That's why in the Bhagavatam it is said, "I salute not the feet of the Lord Krishna. I salute not the feet of the Gopikas who are great devotees of Lord Krishna. I salute the dust of the feet of the Gopikas who were the devotees of Lord Krishna." That is the, you know, the feeling of the Bhagavatam. Because so auspicious is the dust of the feet of the devotee. If so auspicious is the dust of the feet of the devotee, you can imagine how much more auspicious will be the feet of the Lord. So, this is, somebody asked Narayana, "Narayana, what is this? Gajendra called you and you went all the way. Whatever you wanted, you could have finished it from Vaikuntha itself. You are omniscient, omnipotent, omnipresent. What is this? You went all the way just to, you know, make your presence felt to Gajendra." And the Lord says, "You know what? I could have done it from Vaikuntha itself, whatever I needed to do. But Gajendra was holding in his trunk a lotus for me. I went there because I had to go there." He's holding the lotus. The devotee is catching the lotus. The Lord says, "I must go there to take the lotus from his hands for receiving the lotus." And Swami explained, "You know what is that lotus? Because the theme of my talk is lotus feet. So this lotus itself in our spiritual lore has got so much of significance. Why do we say the lotus feet of the Lord? We don't say the feet of the Lord. We say the lotus feet of the Lord. My salutations to the lotus feet." So Swami was saying, "What is that lotus?" That lotus is nothing but the pure heart of the devotee. With all the churning, with all that yearning, with all the pining, the purity that comes in that heart to receive that lotus of the heart, the love-filled heart. That is why I had to go and give darshan personally to Gajendra. One day, I was a student then in the university. Swami had called me with some devotees. And Swami was speaking about his foreign devotees. He said, "See, they are so far away from Puttaparthi, Prashantilayam. But they are like the bees. I am like the lotus, they are like the bees. They come from far away. They come and taste the nectar of the lotus. They drink the nectar of the lotus. And they fly back fully, blissfully intoxicated with that anandam." And then he pointed to all of us and said, "What about y'all? Y'all are like frogs around the lotus. You are next to me, right under me, and yet you do not know the value of the lotus." So that was a great, very, very powerful, you know, what should I say, message. Swami is a bee like the honeybee which comes from far and comes and sucks the nectar of the lotus. Don't be like frogs. So it's not important that you are near the Lord. What is important is you should become dear to the Lord. So that is what we have to continuously keep reminding ourselves, and in that process, keeping our ego under check is so very, very important. And that is why stories like the Gajendra Moksha, because see, what is the moral of the story of Gajendra Moksha? I asked myself, and this beautiful message of Swami came to my mind. A hero becomes a zero if he forgets God. Gajendra was so strong. You may be intelligent, you may be talented, you may be powerful, you may be very, very handsome or beautiful, you may have all the support of everybody around you, like Gajendra also had. But he forgot the divine. He thought that by his own abilities he can achieve everything. He doesn't need God in life. And that is not the purpose why God has sent us into the world. He sent us into this world with the one single mission to come back to Him. So, if we forget Him, if we forget why we entered this world, if we forget that the only way in which we have to move is to direct our life towards the lotus feet of the Lord, then the Lord has to, you know, move 100 moves to ensure that we change course, that we change our direction. And He will do it because He loves us so intensely, so intensely. Another beautiful episode that comes to my mind is from the Ramayana. Rama's brother Bharata comes to know that without any fault of his dear brother Rama has been exiled. And he refuses to take over the reins of the kingdom. He says, no, this is rightfully the property of my brother and I'm going to get him back. So he goes with the full retinue to the forest to get him back. But Rama, of course, doesn't relent. And he is so crestfallen. In fact, that's a beautiful, beautiful dialogue which takes place. A debate takes place, and Janaka, the father-in-law of Rama, is made the judicial presiding officer. So you have to give the judgment. Who is the winner of this debate? So on the one hand, Bharata is trying to persuade Sri Rama to come back. On the other hand, Rama is not willing to budge from his move, and both of them have a wonderful debate. And finally, it is the turn of Janaka to give the verdict. So Janaka says, it has been a wonderful debate today. On the one hand, we have Dharmamurti Sri Ramchandra. And on the other hand, we have Premamurti, the embodiment of love, that is Bharata. And after listening to both sides, it is my opinion that Prema has triumphed over Dharma. And when everybody hears this verdict of Janaka, oh, Bharata is, you know, ecstatic. So that means Rama is coming back to Ayodhya. But the next moment, Janaka turns to Bharata and says, but Bharata, one thing I have to tell you, that in the path of love, there is one law. The lover has to ask the beloved what is the desire of the beloved and attune his own or her own wishes according to the wishes of the beloved. The moment Janaka articulates this principle of love, Bharata shattered. He shattered because in victory he was defeated. In his moment of triumph, he finds that he has lost the battle because he knows what Rama is going to do. So he tells brother, what would you like to do? What would you like me to do? And Rama, he does a very small gesture. He takes his sandals and he removes his sandals and puts it in front of Bharata. The moment Bharata sees it, he gets so, you know, filled with joy. He takes the sandals because he knows that his brother is not going to budge from his decision, but he realizes that he has been immensely blessed because the sandals has been given to him. He says, I will install these sandals and I will rule the kingdom in your name by installing these sandals on the throne. And one thing I tell you, brother, 14 years is 14 years, not one day more. If I find that you do not return in 14 years' time, whenever you come back to Ayodhya, you will not find Bharata alive. This is, you know, a tremendous threat which Bharata gives to Rama. And therefore, when finally Ravana is killed in Lanka, Vibhishana asks, Lord, please tell me, what can I do? He said, I have just 24 hours left for completion of my 14 years of exile. Please give me your Pushpak Vimana. We need to instantly go back to Ayodhya. And as he is traveling in aircraft of those days, he sends Hanuman, his beloved devotee, in advance to inform Bharata. Because he says, in his anxiety, he should not do anything untoward. So we are reaching, so go and tell him. And then one thing he tells Hanuman, when you convey this message that I am returning to Ayodhya, look at the face of Bharata. If you find even one iota of disappointment that, oh, you know, now I'm going to lose the kingdom. Now I will no longer be the king and I have to hand it over to Rama. Just quickly come back and tell me, and I will not return to Ayodhya. I will find my, home somewhere else. I will not come back and take away the kingdom which is so dear to my brother. And of course, Hanumanji arrives in the presence of Bharata, and Bharata, of course, is so joyous. And seeing the joy of Bharata, Hanuman forgets to come back and report to Ramchandra what has happened. So in no time, the Pushpak Viman arrives, and with all the citizens of Ayodhya, Bharata goes. And Swami describes, see, this is what is called as Sarupyam. There are different kinds of liberation, moksha. One of them, four kinds, Swami says, Salokya, Samipya, Sarupya, Sayujya. So, Salokya, you are in the same loka of the Lord. Samipya, you are in the proximity of the Lord. Sarupya, you have the same form of the Lord. And Sayujya, there is no two, it becomes one. These are the four kinds of liberations that are possible on the spiritual path. And this is what Sarupya Moksha was realized by Bharata. Because for 14 years, he didn't stay in the palace. He was actually in a Nandi Grama, in a place, and he was dressing like brother Rama with matted hair and the Gerua cloth and all that kind of thing, and eating whatever Rama would be eating in the forest. So because of that, his whole form became like that of Rama. And so when Rama comes, and Bharata welcomes him, and they are entering the city of Ayodhya. This is how the Ramayana describes, the citizens of Ayodhya are not able to decipher who is Rama and who is Bharata. So they are looking at Bharata and they are thinking that it is Rama himself, and they are taking the garlands and offering it to Bharata. Bharata recognizes the embarrassing moment, and he recognizes the dilemma of the citizens of Ayodhya, and he keeps on pointing to Sri Mama and said, here is Sri Mama, welcome him. So that's how he, you know, brings clarity to the citizens of Ayodhya and how they should welcome Sri Rama. So the point that I wanted to make is the power of, you know, worshipping the sandals of the which were worn by the Lord. One day, I remember when I was 25 years old at that time, and a young teacher in the university, and Swami suddenly sent word that I should take charge as the warden of our boys' hostel. We were a 600 strength hostel at that time, from the 8th standard to the PhD. And for a 25-year-old, it was a phenomenal responsibility. So I thought the next day I must first go and take Swami's blessings. So morning darshan had come, and in the course, after finishing some whatever clarity instructions I wanted to take, I prayed to Swami, "Swami, will you give me your sandals?" I was inspired by Bharata's example. So I said, "Swami, will you give me your sandals? I will install your sandals and I will do the administration in your name," because I thought, I don't think I am capable of doing this kind of a task. So let me do it in the name of the Lord. He said, "You come next time, I will cut my feet and give you." "Come next time, I will cut my feet and give you." I mean, what answer can you give to that? So I just kept quiet. And then he realized that he must give me something specific to which I could practice. And he said, "Install my feet in your heart and do your work." Install my feet. So today, when all of us do not have that opportunity of, you know, the kind of opportunity we had in yesteryears, where darshan, sparshan, sambhashan, you can see the Lord with your glorious, the glorious form of the Lord with your own eyes, you can talk to the Lord with your lips, you can touch His feet with your own hands, when that opportunity is not there, this particular instruction of the Lord, that install my feet in your heart and do your work. Now, what does that really mean? See, the feet are so auspicious. I was talking of the sandals. Recently, somebody shared with me, he was working for a devotee in one of the cities in India. And this gentleman, he was running a hotel. And inspired by Swami's teachings, though his hotel was in a very, very posh area of the city, and there was so much potential for business, he had two principles inspired by Swami's teaching. He said, "In our hotel, we will not serve liquor and we will not serve non-vegetarian food." So, in a modern city like metro, if you put these kinds of conditions, there are so many clientele who will not come to the hotel. So their restaurant was doing extraordinarily well, and it was rated number one in the whole of the city for 4 consecutive years. But the hotel had a very, very minimal occupancy. And in fact, he was thinking, maybe I should exit this business because it is not proving to be remunerative. And as he was toying with that idea, there were many people who were willing to buy, because it's in the heart of the city, in a prime location, and all that the others knew how to make it a lucrative proposition. All that they need to do is start offering liquor and start offering non-veg, and you know, the whole globe is at your lotus feet. So, but he didn't want to do it. One day, it was around 9 o'clock in the night, and he gets a phone call from his manager in the hotel. And he says, "Sir, is it possible for you to come to the hotel?" And actually, the day-to-day operations were not looked after by this gentleman. The day-to-day was being handled by his people. He says, "Why is this man asking me to come to the hotel at 9 o'clock in the night? It's so late in the hour." He said, no, I don't think I can come now." "No, sir, this is very urgent. Please come." He says, "What? Why you want me to come?" He said, "Sir, the Shirdi Sansthan people are here for a day, and they have brought the sandals of Shirdi Baba. They used to take the sandals which Shirdi Baba had worn, and they go from city to city, and they have their own functions there. Instead, for a few hours, they are going to be in our hotel. Next day morning, they are leaving. So if you could come, it would be wonderful." The moment he heard that Shirdi Baba's sandals have arrived in his hotel, without batting an eyelid, this man dashed to his hotel. And of course, in the course of his interaction, these devotees from the Shirdi Samsthan, when he inquired, he says, "We don't know. We were actually supposed to go to some other city. And Shirdi Baba told us." Now, how Shirdi Baba told them, that we don't know, but Lord communicates with his devotees, you know, in so many ways. He says, "Shirdi Baba told us that as you go to the city, go via this particular city. And as you go to that city, there is this hotel in this particular place. Go and stay in that hotel for just a day." So that's how these people who didn't know, they came inquiring, "Where is this hotel?" They were not even supposed to visit that city, but because Baba told, they visited that city, they came and stayed overnight in that particular hotel. And of course, in whatever way this devotee wanted to worship the Lord, sandals, he did his worship. And next day, of course, these people left. But the person who narrated this story, he works in that particular organization, he said, "Ever since Baba's sandals touched our hotel, the soil of our hotel, ever since then, the occupancy of our hotel has shot up like anything. And the profitability has, you know, come back. And there's no talk of giving up the hotel. You know, look at his sandals just stayed for a few hours in the hotel. And look, it has changed the fortunes of the whole place." So therefore, the feet of the Lord are, you know, so very, very precious. It's not so easily accessible. I remember one day, Kasturiji was sharing. Kasturiji, the author of Satyam Shivam Sundaram, the first biographer of Bhagwan, he had gone to Kolkata, which is a city in the eastern part of India. And he heard it from a devotee there. And this gentleman happened to be a tantric. Now, it's a particular path, not for everybody. So his guru one day called this disciple of his. And he said, "See, I'm very, very happy with you. And I will share with you a secret." He says, "Master, what is that secret which you like to share with me?" He said, "I will give you a mantra, chant it for 41 days. And after doing this austerity or this tapas, go and touch the feet of Sri Satya Sai Baba. And all the powers of Sri Satya Sai Baba will become yours." So this tantric asks his guru, he says, "Master, will Satya Sai Baba lose his powers if all the powers get transferred to me?" He said, "No, that will not happen. But whatever powers he has, you will get those powers." So with this secret shared by his guru, this fellow, he did 41 days that whatever penance with that japa of that mantra. And he comes to Whitefield, Swami's ashram in Vrindavan, Bangalore. And Swami comes straight in darshan line to him. You know what? What a magnanimity of the Lord. He was thinking, "The Lord, I am about to get all your powers and you are coming all the way, walking up to me." And to his utter good luck, the person sitting next to him got up. He took up a photograph. He wanted to get that photograph autographed by Swami. So he gets up with that photograph and Swami comes and stands right in front of this gentleman and he takes that photograph and he is signing that photograph. And this man said, "I have an opportunity of a lifetime, you know. My guru's word is going to come true today." So he puts his hand on the feet of the Lord and he is putting his feet and there are no feet. There are no feet there. He's searching. How can he be standing in front of me and the feet are not there? So he tries his level best. Swami, whatever he had to do, he finishes and just walks away. The next day, Swami happens to call this gentleman for an interview. And this man happened to be a follower of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, another great saint of India, in eastern India. And Swami just asked him, "Do you know Pullinga Swami?" Now, this man had read this life story of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa went to a city called Banaras in northern India. And he meets this sage, Pulinga Swami. And the speciality of this particular sage is that he would float. He would float in the air, you know. So that was the power of his tapasya. So Swami just asked him, "Do you know Pulinga Swami?" And that's all. No further conversation. So Swami didn't say, like Pulinga Swami used to float in the air, like that I was floating. That's why you could not find my feet. So the point that I'm trying to make is, it's not so easy to get that feet. You know, I know, I remember there was one student, hostel mate of mine when we were students. And students could go and sit right next to the interview room, you know, where Swami would come out for darshan. So Swami was not looking at him, not talking to him. So this fellow said, no matter where Swami is going to come, I'm going to somehow see that Swami comes to me. So right from the first spot next to the interview room to every inch of space in the Prashanti Mandir, he sat and experimented. And he discovered that no matter where he sits, Swami will not come near him. He will not get a chance to even touch Swami's feet. So the opportunity to touch his feet is not just given. I mean, some of us, if we have got it, and we got it very easily, we do not know the mercy of the Lord that allowed us to touch his feet. If his will is not there, we could never have even touched his feet. One day, I remember it was 70th birthday. See, what is it to touch his feet? One day, 70th birthday, everybody is arriving and, you know, everybody is talking, what are we going to give Swami for his 70th birthday? What gift are we going to give Swami? So my sister and mother arrived at the ashram. They wanted to celebrate the birthday function in Swami's presence. So I got them a room in the ashram and I went and I just asked my sister and said, so many people have come to Prashantalayam and they have brought some gift for Swami for his birthday. What gift have you brought for Swami? This is a question which I asked. And she just thought for a while and she didn't want to tell, no, I have come empty-handed. I didn't bring any gift for Swami. She thought for a while and said, I have come to give my sins at the feet of Swami. I have come to offer my sins, gift my sins to Swami. And both my mother and myself pounced on her. What kind of statement is this? Nobody gives sins to Swami. But it was time for darshan. We just left immediately for the mandir. When I came back to the room in the evening, my sister was beaming with smiles, beaming with smiles. And I said, what happened? He said, Swami has accepted my gift. He said, Swami has accepted. What happened during darshan? He said, not once, twice Swami came and stood right in front of me and I caught hold of his feet. So he has accepted the gift of my sins. Years later, one day in Trai Brindavan, when I was speaking in Swami's presence in some context, I shared this particular experience. And at the end of that whole talk, Swami was telling the students, see, this fellow was talking about his sister and you know how she brought her sins to offer to Swami. And Swami said, that is the correct attitude. Even your sins you can offer to me. Nothing is, anything and everything you can offer to me and I will accept it. I will accept it. So, yad bhavam tad bhavati. If you, what you offer is offered with love, the Lord, like he came all the way to, you know, receive that lotus of Gajendra, you know, like that. He is waiting. He is hungry, not for the thing that we want to give, but hungry for the love, which is underlying that, what we are offering to him. So, when we speak of the feet of the Lord, it is filled with so much of auspiciousness. In the Navavida Bhakti, you know, we say there are 9 forms of worshipping the Lord. One of the forms is called Pada Sevanam. The fourth pathway is called Pada Sevanam. And the great ideal for Pada Sevanam is said to be Lakshmi Devi. All the time, you know, she gets that opportunity to massage the feet of the Lord. Now, it's a glorious opportunity. And but the thing is, not everybody can get it. I remember one day Swami had asked me to handle, take care of the clothes for the Narayan Seva. So in the month of November, just before his birthday, there would be a big distribution of clothes in the stadium. So he asked me to be in charge of the Narayan Seva clothes. So I had to sit in the front row of the mandir, because anytime he may ask, and you know, I have to get up and I have to open the room, and he will see whatever he wants to see. So one day, thousands of devotees from Andhra Pradesh arrived at Prashanti. And the Kulwant Hall as well as the Purnachandra Auditorium was jam-packed only with their people. And that particular day, we were eyewitnesses. Four times Swami walked up and down the Kulwant Hall as well as the Purnachandra to bless these people. I think sometime it must have been in the 90s. So when he finished all that darshan and he came near the interview room, suddenly he called out to me and he called out to another professor who is to follow Swami in darshan line and help him carrying the letters. So both of us rushed inside. And Swami went and sat on the sofa. The moment he went and sat on the sofa, he said, "Koi bhi meri seva nahi karta. There is nobody who is there to serve me." And the moment he said that, we realized instinctively that what we should do. So both of us rushed to his feet and we started massaging his feet. You know, he had walked and walked and walked, and his legs must have been aching. So he wanted the legs to be massaged. So he from one side and I from the other side, you know, we caught hold of it. And for him also, it was a first time experience. And I had never got this kind of a soul, one-to-one opportunity of doing the massage to his feet. So very gingerly, you know, we were catching his feet. And the moment he felt the touch of our massage, one hand, you know, came. He said, "You didn't have your breakfast today?" Well, what kind of pressing of the legs is this? You know, it is of no use. So then the moment he came to, you know, at least pretended to thrash us, immediately, you know, he started vigorously. And that day I realized, my Lord, you know, he doesn't tell anybody, he doesn't tell everybody, but how much his feet must have been aching that day after going like that, walking amidst the devotees. So the point is that at a physical level, it was a very beautiful, and at a human level, the Lord whose feet are everywhere, sarvata pani padam, sarvata shiromukham, his feet are everywhere, his hands are everywhere, his head is everywhere, you know, he is the all-pervading Lord, but when he comes down as an avatar, his feet also ache. And, you know, sometimes some of us or some of the devotees who were with him inside his residence, they got this opportunity to press his lotus feet. But the point is, how many of us can be like Lakshmi Devi, getting the opportunity, this whole exclusive privilege to press the Lord's feet? So I was wondering, what is this Pada Sevanam which our scriptures glorify, you know, as a means to reach the Lord? And this beautiful lines from the Purusha Suktam came to my attention. Padosya Vishwa Bhutani Tripadyasyamritam Divi. So what it means is that this manifest universe is just one pada. You know, there are four padas to the cosmic personality of the Lord. One pada is, or one fourth of his full cosmic personality, is this manifest universe. And three padas, three aspects, are unmanifest. So this gave me a tremendous insight. Oh, if this is how the Purusha Suktam basically is a mantram, is a Vedic mantra describing the cosmic being. So the pada that is being referred to as one aspect as the manifest universe. So pada sevanam means worship. This, or just as you have so much of reverence for the feet of the Lord, have the same reverence and same attitude to serve this manifest universe, which is nothing but me. So I, took this cue from the Pada Sevanam concept that we must serve the Lord, not merely serve the Lord, serve His devotees. You know, thousands of devotees come to Prashantalayam or wherever people are, and some people may not even know that the Lord exists. Even they belong to the Lord. So wherever we are, the moment we resort to seva, one day a devotee asks Swami, "Swami, you have given me this opportunity and the privilege and the power and the instinct and the ability. I feel like going into some Himalayan cave and, you know, meditating for years together there. Is this right, Swami? Can I follow this path?" He said, "At any other point in history," mark his words, "at any other point in history, this may have been fine. But this is not that time. This is not that time." And Swami said, be in the world, but don't be off it. So that is, you know, the beautiful example of the lotus. You know, when we say lotus, what is the lotus? Is born in the dirty waters, and yet, in spite of being born in the dirty water, it rises above, and that is why it's a symbol of purity in spiritual traditions of India. So be like the lotus, be in the world, but don't be off it. So look at me, how I have served humanity now, and therefore this is, you know, what I learned from Swami's, when we say, what is the message of His lotus feet? Walk in His footprints. He served humanity. Today it is the opportunity and the message for every devotee to walk the path which Swami has laid down for us and to redeem our life. Swami, what about liberation? And this is the example that he would give from the Bhagavatam. He said, you know, when Krishna would go to somebody's house, or even in his own house, when he would break a pot of curds or he would break a pot of butter, and they would all have whatever they wanted, and then they would disappear. And so Yashoda will be searching, you know, "No, this my mischievous little kid, he has broken this, and I am going to catch him, and I am going to punish him, and today I am going to teach him the lesson of his life. But where is Krishna? Krishna has disappeared. He is not to be found." So she will be searching, and suddenly she will come across this butter footprints of the Lord, baby Krishna. And she will follow. "Where is our little Krishna?" And here is Krishna, and she will catch him. So Swami said, see, that is the cue you should do. Follow my footprints, you will reach me. So the life, Swami says, my life is my message. Life is my message means he lived his life for others. He lived his life totally selflessly. So live your life. Just as you have so much of adoration for me, have the same kind of reverence for anyway. Somebody around you who needs help. What kind of help? That is not important. He needs some help. If you can help, if nothing you can do, at least you can give him a word of solace so that he gets a little bit of strength of mind, a little bit of confidence, a little bit of, Swami would often tell teachers, see, anytime a student comes to you, never ever tell a student, "You don't have time, you're busy." Why? He said, because he has come to you with so much of something, you know, troubling him in his mind. And at that point of time, for any reason you tell, "Oh, you're not available to him," he won't know where to go. He may never come back to you again. So, practicing that one teaching of Swami, whenever sometimes, you know, they come so suddenly, I would say, "I'm busy at 8 o'clock. Can you come and meet me at 8:30? So, you fix up an appointment, you know. You fix up a time. "Yo, you want to ask me something, please come. But come at 8:30 because 8 o'clock I'm free." So, Swami thereby said, whoever you help, Sarvajeeva namaskaram keshavam pratigacchati. Whomsoever you salute, that service you do to them, that salutation you do to them, that reaches me and me alone. A great example on the path of seva, I'll close this, is from the life of former state president of Tamil Nadu, a gentleman by name T.G. Krishnamurthy. It was the year 1993. Mr. T.G. Krishnamurthy was coming from Bangalore to Puttaparthi, and somewhere near Chikbalapur, he met with an accident. His car made a somersault 3 times, 4 times in the air, and when it fell on the road after that accident, the wheels are up and the car top is down. And for a precious few minutes, they were all dazed in the car. After some time, he came back to conscious state. So he looked around and he asked his friend, "Are you okay?" His friend was fine. His wife had a little few bruises, but he had a collarbone fracture. So they rang up to their relatives in Bangalore. They came, picked them up and took. After 1 month, he comes to Puttaparthi. He comes to Prashantliam, is sitting. As he enters, he meets Captain Oberoi, who was the in charge of our Satya Sai Airport at that point of time. And immediately Captain Oberoi asks him, "Krishnamurthy, how is your collarbone fracture?" He said, "Collarbone fracture? How come you know? I have not told anybody." He said, "Swami told me." "Swami told you? When did Swami tell you?" He said, on the day you had that accident, on the day, and then when they matched the time, exactly at that time when they were meeting with the accident, this conversation takes place between Captain Oberoi and Swami in the mandir. Swami opened the door and he sees Mr. Oberoi sitting there and he said, "Oberoi, your friend Donna Pota Krishnamurthy, he was driving very fast, he has met with a car accident." And Captain Oberoi's face became so small. He said, "Oh, so he's gone." Then Swami said, no, "I have saved him. He is taken care of, so don't worry." So, and Swami described what all happened. So when he heard all this, you know, Krishnamurthy was so grateful to Swami. 1 month later, he had gone to Vrindavan. Swami also had gone there. And then some Japanese devotees had come. So Swami told Krishnamurthy, "Why not you share some experiences with these devotees?" So he started narrating his latest experience. And he came to this particular point and he said that Swami saved my life. Swami said, "I did not save your life." He said, "Swami, you only saved my life." "No, I did not save your life." "No, Swami, you only have saved my life." "I did not save your life. Your karma phala has saved you." And then Swami said, "You know what? Whenever you used to do this seva in this Sai organization, what you used to do, the people who are beneficiaries of your seva, they would say, 'We are so grateful to you. Thank you, sir,' and all that. And you'll say, 'Don't be grateful to us. Be grateful to Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. He only has sent all this for you. He only is helping you all. He only is doing all this for you.' So all their prayers, all their good wishes, all their, you know, sentiments kept on coming to me. And I'm your spiritual banker. So I kept on collecting that in your bank account. 1 minute before your accident was to take place, I just looked into your bank balance and I found that there was enough bank balance in your account to save you. There was enough bank balance in your account to save you. And when the accident took place, your karma phala, the fruits of your actions which had accumulated, and I was only a custodian of that bank balance, spiritual bank balance, that karma phala, without my permission, flew out from the account and went and saved you. So I have not saved you. Your karma phala has saved you. So you don't have to ask permission from the Lord. Your own actions save you. Your own actions will protect you. But, you know, to be able to get that inclination to indulge in thoughts, words and deeds which are dear to the Lord, the lotus feet of the Lord are so important. And that is why we meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. So, with these few words, are there any questions? I don't know. Sir was saying that if there are any questions, for 5 minutes we can. Yeah. So, this is a very beautiful question. One day Swami was speaking to students in Trai Vrindavan. You know, it's his residence in Bangalore ashram. And he said, I will tell it in a gist. He said, there are three ways you can access God's grace. And he said, it's like, he was talking about a bank account. He says, just as you have your own bank account and how you can withdraw money, how you can access money from it, same way you can access grace from this spiritual bank account. And he said, there are three ways. And he took the analogy of a bank. He said, like, first way of getting money from the bank, you open, say, an account, a savings bank account, right? And little deposits you keep making, and little withdrawals also you keep making. So he said, in the same way, in this spiritual bank account, every day, some good thought, some good word, some good deed, keep depositing, small deposits keep making. When the time comes, you know, you can, small deposits, like children make in the piggy bank, you know, one day it becomes a large amount and the parents will say, now we will deposit it in the bank because the money is so much, so many small coins have got accumulated. So he said, these small thoughts, words, deeds, good deeds which you do, that is one way in which you can access divine grace. Second, supposing, like, Swami, in this life, I have not had one good thought, not even one good word I have shared with anybody. I am the most heinous criminal in this whole universe. I have not done anything. Can I get your grace, Swami? And Swami said, yeah, there is a second way of getting divine grace. How? He said, supposing you don't have any savings, but you know, you can ask for a bank loan. You can take some assets, say you have some house, you have some gold or some other properties, you know, which you can pledge or mortgage to the bank. And against that, the bank is willing to give you an advance. They're giving you a loan. So Swami said, in the same way, in this spiritual bank, there is, in this life you did not do anything good, but in your previous lives you have done something good. So that is your assets, you know, which you have accumulated. So against that, I can allow you to access this divine grace. Now there is this fellow. He says, Swami, I have not done one good thing in this life. I have not done one good thing in any life till I have lived till now. Is there a possibility, Swami, to get your grace? Yes, there's one more way in which you can get divine grace. What is it, Swami? He said, you know, if you can get somebody to act as your guarantor. So some very wealthy person or a very reputed person of society says, please give him the loan. If he does not pay, I will pay the bank. So with that guarantee, the bank is willing to extend money to you. So in the same way, in the spiritual bank also, you can get access to divine grace if your guru is willing to vouchsafe for you and guarantee for you. But then, you know, somebody may say, Swami, but I don't have any guru in life. I didn't recognize anybody as my guru. Who will stand guarantee for me? Swami, while speaking to the students, he said, you know who is the guru? The guru is faith. The guru is faith. You have not done anything in your good in your past life. Doesn't matter. You have not done anything good in this life. Doesn't matter. Do you believe at this moment that God, that Swami can help you? Do you have that faith? Your faith will save you. Your faith will save you. At least have that faith. Swami, I trust that with all the power that you embody, you can save this soul. If you cultivate that faith, impossible can become possible. Thank you, Saira.
సుగతికి సంకేతమై జగతికి సందేశమై సుగతికి సంకేతమై సమత మమత నవతలా సమత మమత నవతలా త్రివేణి సంగమమై త్రివేణి సంగమమై ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం రోగార్తిని తీర్చుచు దాహార్తిని బాపుచు విద్యార్తిని విజ్ఞానిగా సుజ్ఞానిగా మార్చుచు రోగార్తిని తీర్చుచు దాహార్తిని బాపుచు విద్యార్థిని విజ్ఞానిగా సుజ్ఞానిగా మార్చుచు కులమత భేదాల కూల్చి మానవతలు పండించగా కులమత భేదాల కూల్చి మానవతను పండించగా ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం సాయి స్ఫూర్తి ప్రతిమతిలో సాయి దీప్తి ప్రతియదలో సాయి స్ఫూర్తి ప్రతిమతిలో సాయి దీప్తి దశ దిశలా సాయి కీర్తి దశ దిశలా సాయి కీర్తి వెళ్ళి విరియ వెలుగొందగ విశ్వశాంతి దాయకమై వెళ్ళి విరియ వెలుగొందగ విశ్వశాంతి దాయకమై విశ్వశాంతి దాయకమై ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఉప్పొంగుచు ప్రవహించెను ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ప్రేమ ప్రవాహం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దివ్య ప్రాభవం ఇదే ఇదే సత్య సాయి దేవ్.